Welcome, everyone, to Paranormal Roundtable. I'm your host, Josh Turner, and with me is Anthony and Tony, and we are going to talk about some things. Let's get all the prelims out of the way so we can get started, because I am excited to tell this story. This is sort of a continuation of last week, but it's different stories that were given to me by the same family. But this is interesting. And the cool thing about networking is this is how you meet cool people like Alex, the guy who says, hey, my family is from Belarus, and we got some really cool stories. Interesting stuff. And yeah, he gave me a few different ones. He gave me a really creepy ghost story, one from his grandfather, and I told that one last week, but I also talked the story last week. Obviously, it was about a vampire, or at least that's what we labeled it as. And this one definitely is a werewolf story, and there's two of them. So this is how I originally started talking to him, was about the werewolf stories. But the vampire story seemed just as intriguing. So I was like, you know what? We'll just tell them all. So here we go. Alex is a very, very busy guy. He's like me. Like I said last week, he's probably one of the only people that I've known that's as busy as me. And it took us months to coordinate to get this done. So here we are for round two. Same time next week, yeah, right? Before I do all that, the Patreon is a good way to support the channel. Like I said before, check us out. We're on six nights a week at this point, if you count the night that I'm on with Blondes and Blues on Thursday at 8 o'clock. And then, of course, Wednesday, we have the interviews. I think this is part three with Angela Shelton, where she starts to get into her Dogman stuff. That's the one that's coming up tomorrow night. And then last week was part two with Angela Shelton and some of the spooky, scary, terrifying even things that she went through living in haunted houses. An experiencer for sure. Those are every Wednesday at 7 o'clock. These episodes are every Tuesday at 7 o'clock. And then of course I'm on Thursday at 8 o'clock with the Blondes and Booze. We're on Friday night at, we end up usually starting about 9, but we're trying to get started earlier, like 8. And then on Saturday, we come on at 8 and we do the UAP thing, which I call the Unidentified Alien Presence. That is what it is. That's what I use it. I don't use it as the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena. I could give a crap about that. I'm just joking. It's all relative. And then on Sunday, we talk about people's encounters. We retell people's encounters, which is what we do on this particular episode, which if you're listening to us on the podcast on Spotify or on iTunes, just remember, if it's all you're listening to, you're missing out on hours and hours and hours of entertainment on the live streams. The Friday, Saturday, and Sunday shows are only on YouTube. So that being said, let's talk about the Patreon. The Patreon is $10, $20, $30, $40, $50 tier. Each level gives you a better, bigger swag bag. $10 gets you an autographed book from one of many authors. $20 gets you an autographed book and a shirt or a hoodie if we have them in stock and it's wintertime. $30 tier gets you two autographed books from different authors. $40 tier gets you two autographed books from different authors and one of my books. $50 tier gets you both of my autographed books, Werewolves and the Dogman Phenomena and the Bigfoot Phenomena, and two other books from different authors. And you get the shirt and hat or a hoodie, whichever we got, whatever. So you get all that and more, all right? Depending on what we have in stock, we'll make it worth your while. But you have to be a member for 2 months before you get anything. Everybody understand that? Good. Okay, so let's get started. Do we have anything else to say? Join the Paranormal Roundtable Facebook group. That's a good one to go join. There are several shows we're affiliated with, too. Go and check them out. Barton Unleashed got a show. Bettina Moss got a show. Blondes and Booze. Matt Imch. Who else? Texas Front Porch.
Rivals.
A bunch of people. A lot of people. Bigfoot Michigan, Rob. All those people. Check out their shows. Look them up. You'll find them, but let's get started. So when we were talking last week, we were talking about a guy whose name was Alex who got in touch with me through another person who told him, hey, you should check out this guy's show. He listened off and on for a couple months, and then he got in touch with me. He said, my dad has an incredible story to tell you about what he believes is a vampire, that him and his friend Sava encountered a vampire. But we talked on the show, we alluded to another story. And that was a story that Alex's grandfather, which would have been Mikhail's, which Mikhail's his dad, Mikhail had the vampire encounter. His dad, Mikhail's dad, which would have been Alex's grandfather, had something happen to him during World War II. And two Soviet soldiers, had their heads removed from their bodies when they were fighting the Germans, when they were pushing west. And the Germans had been driven back, and they were in retreat, but then they were stopping and setting up and then continuing to fight, and then they would push back, and then they would stop, and they continue to fight. So it was really rough, you know, a rough go. And at one point, they were bogged down fighting one of the SS divisions, and it was the Soviet Special Forces, their elite, against the German elite. And it was a real slugfest, and it was just back and forth. And it became a sort of mild trench warfare, not in the SARMs like we're talking about World War One, but like, yeah, they were like ground gained one day, was lost the next, and it was just back and forth, and they were getting hit with artillery. The German military was still very much intact at that time, and it was really bad. And his dad, who had originally helped the Germans, was now fighting for the Soviets, and he had no choice. His will was not his own. When the Germans came through, he joined up with them, you know, because it was like, well, join us or die. You know, you don't really have much of a choice there. But he did say that the Germans treated him a lot better than the Soviets did. The Soviets had a long history at that point of oppressing the people of Belarus and the Ukraine. And I'm not bagging on the Russians. I'm just saying that is what these people say. That is from their perspective. I've heard this many times. And the reason, instead of looking down on them for their choices, the reason was because they looked at the Germans as liberators. And then when the Soviets came back through, the Germans left. And so they were like, join us or die. So they had to join the Soviets. I mean, it wasn't really a choice. So anyway, his dad was fighting with the Soviets, and he was on sentry duty. And they had heard stories of people who supposedly were just going AWOL. And this is his dad's dad, like, you know, his grandfather. So his grandfather, you know, he told his son, who I did speak to a little bit, speaks very, very little English, and that would be Mikhail that had the vampire experience. He said that his dad told him, he says, I didn't believe it for a second. He goes, these men would be there smoking a cigarette one minute, and the next minute they're just gone. And he's like, what, they're all just dropping their rifles and running? He's like, you didn't abandon your post, whether you were a German or a Russian? Hell no. I mean, either army was known for just shooting you for insubordination. There wasn't going to be no trial, and, hey, maybe we can convict you, and then you go to, you know, the stockade or whatever. No, that is not what was going to, Leavenworth, no, that's not what they did. They didn't have time for that. This is war. You abandon post, you die. So there wasn't a lot of people running away at that time, because they were being watched by everybody. And there was fighting going on up and down that entire front. It was hundreds of miles long. And the units that they were fighting were pretty nasty and pretty capable units. And so they had to be on their toes. And at any time, they might get attacked, whether it was day or night. And so these sentries started going missing, and he suspected something. And the main reason that he thought that it was something other than human was because he saw these giant paw prints. One of the sentries who was sitting up in a tree, and this was not like in the middle of winter or whatever, but it was starting to get cold, and it was early fall. He goes, and I look, and it was like it had been raining. He goes, and I see in the mud these two huge footprints that were obviously a wolf. He goes, I'd been around wolves my whole life. There's a lot of them in Belarus. And he goes, but these prints were on two legs. And so the idea of werewolves was not uncommon. I mean, from either side of that war, the Germans, the Belarusians, the Russians, the Latvians, everybody, the Polish, they all had a very, very rich history of werewolf lore. And the average person probably believed in them. I mean, there was even a unit of German soldiers that was a splinter, an offshoot of the SS, And they were called the Werewolves. And their job was to use, they were Panzer Grenadiers, and they used grenades, tank buster, Panzerfaust to shoot the T-34 Russian tanks and knock them out. And those tanks were very, very effective, those T-34s. They were pretty badass tanks. And so going up against those with nothing but like basically a grenade launcher, you had to be half crazy. So there was a history of that. And the Soviets, when he went to one of the guys that was in charge, one of the captains, he said, look, he said, there's these weird looking footprints. So he took one of the higher ups back and he showed him, he says, these guards, I don't think that they're abandoning their post. Something's grabbing them. And he even found blood on one of the trees, him and another guy. And his friend Vitaly told him, he said, do you remember when we were children in our village, which was right outside of the place we talked about last week? I don't want to butcher the name of it. Dubrovna. So the place we talked about last week, Dubrovna, their village was just a little bit further to the north of that. And he said that we grew up out there on the little collective of farms, you know. And he says, and when we were children, there was a werewolf that was causing all kinds of problems, killing people's livestock and even killing people. And I'll get into that in a minute after we're done talking about this. And he told Vitaly, he's like, you really believe that this is what we're dealing with? Because he goes, we were children when that happened. Vitaly was about 8-9 months older than him. And he says, I was 6 years old and you might have been 7. Do you remember that? He's like, I don't remember seeing anything. He goes, no, but my older brother and cousin saw it, and so did your brothers. He's like, so maybe it's real. He goes, Mikhail honestly believed that that his dad didn't have a real good memory of it. He believed that his dad, who was the one that was, you know, fighting in the military during the war, thought that maybe it was just a story, you know, that they had blown up, you know, for some vagabond that was stealing things and eating them. And he thought they killed this guy. So they just said, okay, he was a werewolf. That's why we killed him. And he was really just like some vagabond. And he always believed that they blew the story up out of proportion to scare the kids so that they wouldn't go out at night and do bad things and whatever and blah, blah, blah. And it was always this story, you know, oh, he broke the windows out of one of his neighbor's barns. And then they said, oh, the werewolf's going to get you, you know, because you did this and you did that, you know. And they even had a name for him. And it was like some name that they gave him or whatever. Vladiksk or something like that was the name of this guy who supposedly was the werewolf. He was an old hermit that they literally killed him. And so he said, you know, I don't believe those stories. He goes, I don't know what this is we're dealing with, but this can't be a werewolf because I don't believe in it. And so he told him, he says, I do. He says, and I remember when they took that guy. He's like, and I don't remember seeing a werewolf, but I remember seeing a man. And when they took him down, he saw something very strange. And I'll get to that in a minute. Don't let me forget about that. Yeah, so he said, you know, his higher up went to him and he said, look, he goes, we can't go and tell people what we're looking at here because the soldiers, they're already under attack. They don't need to be afraid of some kind of beast walking on two legs, snatching them up. And he said, at that point, there was another guy there that was, and his name was Ivan. And Ivan told him, he said, you mean a werewolf? And the higher up turned and told him, grabbed him by his collar and says, don't repeat that word. Don't say that to these men. He's like, a lot of these men are peasants that grew up in the woods, just like you. And they're going to believe these stories. He's like, and I don't need more people panicking and running away. We're fighting the SS, not werewolves. And so that was it. And he just kind of left it at that. And so a couple days later, it was his turn to be on guard duty. And he's like standing there, you know, watching, making sure the enemy, you know, looking through his binoculars, looking, making sure the enemy's not charging, coming out, firing, throwing grenades, whatever it is they're going to do. And he said that nothing happened the first night, but the second night he heard twigs snapping just to the north of him, to his right, as he's facing the west. And he thought, I'm going to hear either Russian or German. He said a lot of the Germans and the Russians learned to speak German, and the Germans learned to speak Russian. And so when they would speak, they would trick you. You wouldn't know who was who. And the Germans said the same thing. The Russians were speaking German and vice versa. And the same thing happened with, you know, in the Pacific Theater. I mean, you know, it was like I was reading about the Chinese and the Japanese, and they were fighting back and forth, and they couldn't tell who was speaking who. And they were like, what's going on here? And sometimes people can pick up an accent really quick, and they're lingual, and they you can't tell. So he says, I'm waiting to hear German, and then I'm waiting to hear Russian. He goes, and I don't hear that. He's like, I hear this weird kind of like a hissing noise. He's like, and then I look over, and he goes, and for a split second, I saw something move. It was big and black. He said it must have been like 7-8 foot tall, and it ran really quick. And he goes, and it ran toward the German line. And he goes, and I was like, what the heck was that? And he's like, and then he thought to himself, hey, werewolf. And then he said, I got to put these thoughts out of my head, man. I can't be thinking this. He said, so he just sat there, and he went back up into the tree, and he sat there, and he felt more comfortable up in the tree. And he said, you know, I was just kind of sitting there swinging my legs. He's like, and then boom. He goes, and the next thing you know, there's like mortars hitting our line, and the tree next to me literally exploded in 1,000 splinters, and they were using 30 mils, which aren't really heavy, big artillery, but they're devastating to soft targets being, you know, people. And so they were trying to knock out his pocket. His pocket wasn't supported by the T-34s. It was the weak spot. So they tried to stuff as many men in there as they could. And so the Germans figured it out, and they started shelling them with these 30 mils. And if they get close enough, they'll roll up and just blast you with 20 mils, which are smaller, but they're just made to just make people disintegrate, basically. And so he said, we had two tanks in that little, you know, pocket that we were in, and one of them didn't even work anymore. It was run down and out of fuel, and he goes, we were badly out of supplies. He goes, but I think the Germans were too, because they weren't doing much attacking. Everybody was just playing defense. And so he goes, at this time, there was this flash of light, you know, going, you know, up in the sky. I could see the bombs coming, going off, whatever. And then he said, there were planes that were flying just to the south of us. And he goes, and I could see them, that they were fighting in the sky. He goes, and while I was preoccupied looking up, he goes, I hear the scream. He goes, I jumped down and I run over, and I thought maybe some of the German soldiers who had jumped into the ditch and were trying to kill us hand to hand. He goes, they would do that too. They were pretty proficient. The SS, they would use their knives, whatever, just to save bullets. And so he thought maybe they were stabbing them or something, because there was no gunfire right there. He just heard screaming. And it was just mortars, you know, being lobbed back and forth. And so he said he got down and he ran over to that end of the line, and he slid down into the ditch, and he looked, and there were two guys, both without their heads. And he said that it was shocking to him. He said that they looked like their heads had been ripped from their bodies. He's like, and then I look and I see this footprint going up out of the trench. He goes, and then he goes, this was weird. It was something. It wasn't a human. He goes, and part of the one guy, one of the soldier's shoulder was missing, along with the other dude's arm. So this thing had taken them, pieces of them. And it looked like he had tried to drag one of the bodies up out of the trench, but it got caught up in what was the barbed wire. And so he said, dude, this was something completely unnatural. He goes, and dude, I'm sitting there in that ditch alone. I look over, and there's one other guy that should have been there who probably got hit by a mortar, because there wasn't anything left of him. And he didn't think that it was this creature. He thought it was, you know, it got hit. He could see what the damage it did. So he said, so those guys were all gone. He goes, and I was by myself. He goes, and he goes, I'm a good like 30, 40 yards away from the other guys. And they're firing, but he goes, they're not hitting anything. They're just shooting and wasting bullets. And he goes, and I hear one of the commissars yelling and screaming, stop, stop shooting because they're out of range. They're shooting mortars at us. And he called them dumbasses, you know? And so they stopped and he goes, and so I ran over there and there was like this one little like mud wall. He's like, I had to climb up over, it's about 5 foot, and he fell down onto the other side and he crawled through the other, you know, 20 yards or whatever and got to them. And he said, the guys on my side are dead, you know? And he goes, oh, they got hit by the mortar. He goes, no, one of them did. He goes, but the other two, I don't know what happened to them. Their heads are gone. So one of the leaders, the next day, the next morning, he goes over there and he inspects it. And they were in shock. This thing looked like it had eaten part of them. There was a huge bite taken out of one of them's shoulder and the arm was missing. So two guys, no heads. About an hour after that, the first patrol that they did going through the woods, they were crawling through trying to make sure they didn't get hit by snipers. He's like, and they found a bloody trail and they followed it hands and knees until they figured they were out of range of the line. And they got up and began to walk and follow the blood until they got up to a tree. And on that tree, there was blood all the way up the tree. And they see pieces of a guy that had gone missing, a man that had gone missing about 3 or 4 days before. And they were like, well, there's your lost sentry right there. And his helmet was laying on the ground and his body had been unclothed. And he says, what kind of, you know, what is this? And the guy says, well, it must be a predator. Something grabbed him. And he says, yeah, it took his clothes off and devoured parts of his body. He goes, I don't think so. I don't believe that. I don't believe that for a second. Once again, the commissar grabs him and starts shaking him and tells him, do you want to be shot? He goes, you don't breathe a word of this. And so once again, he was told not to say anything. The other guy was with him, the other soldier. He tells his friend Vitaly, he says, you cannot repeat this. Because if you do, I'm in danger of being shot or hung. And the Soviets didn't play. And he was like, you know, he goes, at that time, Vitaly was like, the Germans were starting to gain ground again. And his friend was seriously considering like joining back up with the Germans. He was like, it can't be any worse than this crap. You know, he goes, these people, we're over here being attacked by some kind of creature. He goes, the Germans treated us fair. Why don't we just go, you know, whatever. At this point, while he's talking, he's whispering. Then he looks at Mikhail's dad, who is Alex, the guy telling me this story, his grandfather, and he sees a look of terror on his face, and he turns around, and he's looking right into the eyes of his higher-up, who heard everything he had just said, and grabbed him by his collar and starts to take him up out of the ditch and says, come on, time to be shot. And he pulled his gun out and said, you can stand up and be shot, or you can sit in the ditch with your hands up and die like a dog. And he starts to beg and plead with him. And then between him and Mikhail's dad, they were able to talk this guy out of it. He goes, because they needed every man they could get. And he says, please, give me a chance. I'll prove my loyalty. I'm sorry. I was just talking. He's like, I'm scared of this beast or whatever. Then the commissar points the gun at him and says, oh, so you, after I told you not to say a word of this, you go and you tell this guy, and now he's panicking and wanting to go AWOL. So he's waving the gun back and forth, and a couple of his underling officers go up and they tell him to stop, calm down, get it under control. The guy puts the gun to his head, the other hand to his other side of his head, and just lets out a scream because he's so frustrated. He's angry because he can't get any ground against the Germans. And there's this creature, well, it's basically killing people, and he doesn't know what to do. And so he's like, oh, we're stuck, you know, we're just sitting here, you know, and it's starting to get cold, you know, and he goes, and I don't know what to do. And so he goes, he sits down on the ground and just begins to cry because he's just like so distraught. He said, and then all of a sudden, nobody expected it, but he just like turns the gun on himself and boom. And he's like, then we're just sitting there going like, oh my gosh, great. Now our leader is gone. So then he said a couple nights go by and nothing happens. And then he hears a bunch of yelling and screaming, and he hears what sounds like tanks rolling, and he hears people speaking in German, schnell, schnell, whatever. And he was like, that's unmistakably Germans speaking Germans, speaking German. And he's like, and there was nothing we could do. He goes, there was about 50 of us left in that particular spot. We were just kind of left there. He goes, we had the one T-34, their Panzers knocked it out really quick, and then it was over. And he goes, and we threw our hands up and we surrendered. He said, crazy. He goes, the Germans pulled us out of the ditch. And he goes, and one of them, who he remembers, and he didn't remember his full name, he goes, but his last name, he said, was something like Shellman or something. And he said, this Shellman guy, he says, ah, I remember you. You know, yeah, you're whatever. And so they trusted him. So they let him just be free. They didn't lock him up or put him in, plus they didn't have anything they could do with him. So they just left him there, you know, in a little, like a little huddle in the hole, and the Germans were on the outside of it. And he said that at one point they were sitting there two nights after they had surrendered to the Germans, and this pocket had been taken and the Germans were getting ready to push on. They said, well, we can't take all of you. So you're either going to have to suit up and join us or be shot. So every one of them to a man was like, that's an easy choice. We'll join you. He's like, so five of us, they gave guns to. I was one. He's like, while we're talking about what's about to happen and what their plans are, at least what they were letting us know about, he's like, we hear bam, 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 all along the line. And he goes, and it started far to the south of us. He goes, and then I see like, and this is the predecessor to the M60.
MG42.
And so he goes, I see one of them set up an MG42 and just start blasting. He's like, and I don't know what they're shooting at. And then he goes, I see, you know, one of the Leutnants, that's lieutenant, and he starts yelling, stop, 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 you know, and they all just stopped firing. And then a couple of them came running up and they were like, they were saying, werewolf, werewolf. They saw a werewolf. They saw this big, massive wolf that was on all four legs, get up on two legs, and then run into the woods, into the forest. And so they all began to fire at it. And so he said, you're wasting ammunition. There's no werewolf. And he started screaming at him and even slapped one of the guys and then grabbed him and started shaking him. And they were all like, but Leutnant, we saw it. It was real. It was a werewolf, you know. Of course, you're not going to be speaking English with a German accent. And then the Russians were like, no, for real. There's something that did happen to us that grabbed two guys. And of course, you're not going to be speaking Russian with them, you know. English with a Russian accent, but
just use your imagination.
Use your imagination. And they said there's,
it's like two Romans in movies always have a British accent.
Yeah, they're always transatlantic. And then he says, two guys, I found them dead. They were laying no heads, part of arm. Then later going into tree, finding guard gone. And one of the Germans said, he's right. He's right. He goes, when we came to close that northern spot, he goes, we found one of their soldiers up in a tree, and his helmet was at the base of it. And he said, yeah, yeah, see, yeah. And then they were like, oh my gosh. And so they all started putting their heads together, and the Germans were telling them, they were like, then there's something out here. He goes, something was taking our guards too from the northern side. And they were like, really? Yeah, we thought they were just going AWOL. We were like, where were they going? And we would see their boot prints, and then they would just disappear in the mud. They were just gone. And so everybody got real panicky and freaked out. And the Russians and the Belarusians were like, oh, you know, give us a gun, you know. And the Germans were like, we don't have enough guns, you know, and we're waiting for a supply line. So they had a plane that would come in and drop the supplies down behind the lines. So when that did, a couple of the Belarusians, one of the Russians and three of the Germans went and retrieved it. He's like, and when they were breaking open the crate, they were so happy. There was food, there was coffee, there was cigarettes, ammunition, and a few other things. And they were like happy, and they were getting it back to the line. He says, as we were getting it back to the line, we hear this sloshing noise, broad daylight. He goes, and we look up and we see this weird looking creature, like walking on all fours, like lifting up its paw and scratching itself. And then he realized, he goes, that's not a paw. That's a hand. He's like, and then it stood up. He goes, and it was bigger and more massive than anything we could have imagined. It was not a 7-8 foot tall creature. He said, this thing looked like a werewolf, but kind of like a bear, but it also looked human. And he goes, and you could see the humanness in its eyes. And he goes, and it let out this weird roar. He goes, and it was like something that went through our bodies. And he goes, and every soldier that was there just started firing at this thing. Just, you know, and then it just dropped down into the water. And we thought, oh, we killed it. It's dead, right? But this was not, this was not, what's his name? It was, Mikhail's dad. This didn't happen. He wasn't one of the ones that went and retrieved the stuff. He was being told this, right? And he says, and then they thought, we got it. We killed it. But nobody wanted to go up and see if it was dead. So one of the Belarusians told one of the German soldiers, he's like, don't you have a grenade? And he said, yeah. So he took it, unrolled it, and threw it in like right there, dead center on the spot where it should have been laying. And they thought it was just hiding under the water. And boom! And nothing. Nothing came out of the water. Nothing happened. And finally, they got the nerve. And one of the Germans said, we have to go and look. So obviously, they took the Russian and put him in front and said, you go, because the Belarusians and the Germans were like, you know, you go do it. And so the Soviet starts to walk and he's talking and mumbling and freaking out, you know, and he's begging them not to make him do it. And they're like, nope, go do it. You do it. We're not risking ourselves. And so when he gets over there close to this thing, he stands in the water and he turns around and he's like really nervous, has his hands up, and he's like, nothing, nothing. Everything's fine, right? And then they said, okay. And so they all just looked around the water and then they just took off walking. The guy stood there in the water, did not move. And for whatever reason, he was stupid enough to try and escape with these guys armed, him not armed, and he started running. The Germans looked at each other, and they looked at the Belarusians, and they all just kind of shrugged their shoulders and was like, go ahead. There's nothing out there but miles and miles of wilderness, and more than likely, the Soviet movement was from this down to the south. They were the furthest north at that point for about, you know, 50 miles. So they were like, go ahead, run. And so he gets kind of further away, and one of the Belarusians told him, he's like, well, if you let him go far enough, he's probably going to find someone and they're going to give him our location. So then one of the Germans handed him his rifle and said, well, then you shoot him, you know? And so he says, fine. So he like cocks the bolt, goes to shoot him at the last second. He's like, yeah, I can't do it. And then they said, good, fine, let's go. And so they just kept going. And the Germans told him, do not tell anybody what just happened, that we let this guy go. As they're arguing and talking about it, because one of the Germans says, we got to go get him, and he's got his Luger out, and he's aggravated, and they're going back and forth, they hear a loud scream. And they look at the tree line, and something is standing there, and it looks like this guy is being eaten headfirst by some large creature. It's identical to what they just saw in the water. And so they were like, okay, and then they debated all the way back to camp if they should talk about what they just saw. Well, when they get back to camp, according to what Alex told me, they get back to camp, his grandfather was there. He was one of the people on guard duty, and he says, what happened? And they told him what happened. They said, and the Russian, one of the Russians ran and got, you know, he ran away and he got killed. And then one of the, as they would say, Übergruppenführers went over there to them and said, why did you just let this guy run away and you didn't shoot him? So then they made up a story because they had agreed to lie, basically. And they said, well, we saw this creature and we threw a grenade and we shot it. Nothing happened. And then the guy took off running and we saw the creature chase it and tear him up. But that's not really what happened. This thing must have like teleported or done something supernatural, stayed under the water, because there's no, so that's the weird part about it. Not that it's already weird, you know, but that makes it even weirder. So what ended up happening, according to what I was told by Alex, he says, my grandfather tells my dad this whole story. He says, look, He's like, then I started to believe when I was a child that maybe there was a werewolf and maybe this was real. And maybe what was happening to all of us, he's like, the Russians, the Belarusians, the Germans, we were losing our minds. War was making us crazy, and this could not possibly be really happening. There are no such thing as werewolves. And then I told Alex, I said, do you know that there are multiple accounts of not only Bigfoot, not only werewolves, but also Bigfoot in World War II? Yeah, we talked about it on the show. And I said, dude, there was a lot of weird things going on. And so he asked me, he says, do you think that this was a shape-shifting person, or do you think it was a, you know, whatever they call a dog man? I said, I can't tell you that, but I do know they exist. And I wouldn't doubt that one of them would be opportunistic and pick people off during an armed conflict. What better way to do it? And so he said, yeah. He's like, I've thought about it a lot. You know, he goes, I've never seen anything like that. And the most that's ever happened to Alex, he heard his voice being called in the night, and he saw what he thought was the Baba Yaga. What happened, though, and what made this story more intriguing and got more, I mean, just out there, was they were at camp. They were just completely surrounded by the Russians, and it was like they had not been able to move or make ground or catch up with the other army group. And so they were essentially cut off. And there was like this encirclement. And the only thing they could do was go further north. And if they went far enough north, they could hook up with the Finnish. Now, the Finnish were the Germans' allies during the war, and they were fighting a bloody battle in the north against the Soviets. And so they knew that if they marched far enough north, they could get out of there, of the encirclement. So that's what they did. And he said, so there was 162 German soldiers, and they began to walk north to try to hook up with the Finns and the other German units that had joined, which I believe would be called Army Group A. So they were trying to join up with them. And this was really cool talking to him and his dad about it, because it was a history thing for me too, and I really enjoyed that. And he said that the Soviets had come in, and they had made this really good encirclement, and they had a lot of soldiers. He said they were facing probably about a couple thousand. Them, 162. We're talking Alamo odds here. So they keep marching, and he said if we were caught with the Germans, that we wouldn't just get shot, we would be tortured. He's like, the Russians were really, really notorious for torturing anybody who they suspected of collaborating with the Germans, even if you were forced to by the Germans. You were still killed, you know. And he said that he remembers them torturing a Romanian soldier by putting cigarettes out in his eyes. And the Romanians, of course, were Germany's ally too. And the Romanians were treated exceptionally harsh by the Russians. Anybody who fought on the Axis side was treated really badly. And so he knew that their only chance was to march with these Germans and hope that when they could get out of there and just, you know, get out of that area where they were at. This is in the Soviet Union. This is not in Belarus. And so they're marching up north, trying to get to where the Finns were. He's like, and then he's like, as we're marching one night, we hear this screaming down the line, and we hear firing, gun firing and shooting. And one of the guys comes running up, carrying one of the other guys' canteen and everything, you know, and the supplies, because they didn't want to leave him behind. And he's like, they got another guy, you know, and he's over there telling them what happened. And he's like, it's that creature. It did it again, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he said, dude, at this point, it was getting ridiculous. You know, he's like, every night somebody was getting picked off. He's like, and then eventually the Russians caught them out in the open. They surrendered. They gave up. They just said, okay, we're done. You know, they threw their hands up. They were cut off from the rest of their comrades. And so the Soviets took them. Now, one of the Soviet officers took the German officer for debriefing. He wanted to find out what he knew so that he could get information. And he said, while they were talking, something attacked their little makeshift tent and tore it down. And there was this big chaos and all this commotion. And running amok through the soldiers was this big wolf, bear-like, I don't know what kind of damn creature it was. He said, and it was just like, you know, charging at people, but not really doing anything, just scaring the crap out of everybody. And people were shooting it everywhere. And he said that the Russians were shooting each other. And at one point, they were standing up feet from each other, just blasting each other. It got so ridiculous because this thing had made such a big, you know, commotion. And then it took off into the woods and it was gone. Now, he said that this supposed encounters that happened, he said this was not an isolated thing. But he goes, to this day, the Soviets, they know that this happened. And now if the Germans would have won, he said, maybe we would know more about it because they kept accurate whatever, and they were a little more open with their numbers and stuff like that, whereas the Soviets were very secretive, very, you know, the NKVD, which became the KGV, was a very, very, very powerful organization, and they were very good at keeping things under wraps. And he said that, but you can now go and look this up, according to him. Now, I didn't do that because I didn't have time. But he said that there were cases of this happening. And he goes, that night, 36 Russians died and two Germans. He goes, and all it was them shooting each other. You know, I mean, it was ridiculous. And he said that, you know, a couple thousand strong, you know, and he goes, and we hunkered down. Winter was there now at that point, and they just kind of like made camp and made the best of it. And he said that we were just waiting for supplies to see what was going to happen in the north, or if the war that was further south was going to come up to where we were at. He's like, and so we just decided nothing was going on. So we just decided, you know what, we're going to camp here. The Russians just kept the Germans as prisoners. They did do what they call decimation. And you know what that is, Anthony?
It's a form of punishment that goes back to ancient Rome, but it's when they line all the men up, they kill every 10th man. So you better hope you're not that 10th guy.
So they just counted off every 10th German soldier, Belarusian and whoever. The Belarusians had feigned that they were being held as captives, and the Germans actually backed them up and said, yes, they were our prisoners. They weren't helping us, which wasn't really true. But the Germans played nice and said that. And he said that it was really sad watching them be lined up and shot, every 10th man be shot. He said, and then the Russians, the next night after the first night of the decimation, they got hit by whatever this thing was again. Somebody got snatched off their post. So, to make an example of the other guards, because they thought that maybe he had fallen asleep and that's why he got taken, they marched four of them out into the middle of the camp and shot them. So, people knew not to play around. The Soviets were not messing around, you know? The Germans knew at this point, too, they will kill you. Just, you know, they're being nice right now, letting us live, hoping probably to especially with the officers, to use them as bargaining chips. The Germans were a little more willing to bargain to get their soldiers back, whereas the Soviets didn't care. They did not. I know that is history, is a fact. Also, the other armies like the Romanians and the Hungarians, they were not, you know, not as caring about their soldiers. They didn't really, it wasn't, you know, they were not as pleasant when it came to that. Same goes for the Japanese, you know, multiple other militaries in that war were pretty brutal and pretty harsh even to their own people. The Germans get the bad rap for it, but it's really, I think it would be the Soviets would be top dog when it came to just throwing their men to the wind. They had a large surplus of men, and it was anything to win type affair. And so these guys, you know, killing their own soldiers and shooting every 10th German kind of set the tone that you better behave and just be glad that you're out here freezing to death instead of shot in the head. So what ended up happening, they were there for almost 2 weeks, and it was a nightly thing where this thing, whatever it was, would come. And in the official records of what they said, that they told the men to call it a bear. They said it was a bear. And everybody that was there was like, no. No, this was not a bear. Eventually, the German army and the Finnish had swept down into the south, taking over and reappropriating the soldiers. Some of the Finnish were of the opinion that they should just kill all the Soviets and be done with them. The German high command told them to spare them and to debrief them and then march them into captivity, moving them further back behind their line, going west. And so that's what ended up happening. The Finnish said, okay, fine, we'll let you take them, do whatever. And but they did do decimation. Same thing. Basically, the Germans told them, this is what they did to us. So the Finnish said, okay. And so they did the same thing. And unfortunately, one of the people that was killed was Mikhail's friend, Vitaly. And he said he'd never cried so hard in his life. And so one of the witnesses to this whole affair was gone, like just like that. But after the war, eventually he ended up in a German POW camp, and then he was liberated and then reassigned to a prison battalion. And he was like, why am I going to a prison battalion? Well, because after the war, he would be marched into the Gulag with the Soviet supposedly defectors or whatever. And there was a lot of them. And they were kept there. He was there for 5 and a half, almost 6 years. Hard labor in Siberia. Eventually, they put him on a train, sent him back to Moscow. And from there, he basically walked all the way back to Belarus. His wife was a loyal woman, had been waiting for him, did not know whether he was alive or dead. And he was very malnourished, and he had barely eaten anything, you know, day after day, just being worked almost to death. And it was a miracle that he survived, having pneumonia and body lice and everything else. It was eating him alive. And he was so weak, he could barely eat, and he was on the verge of starvation. And so it's a pretty epic story, just getting back, you know, to Belarus. And he, you know, when Mikhail was talking and Alex was translating, he was talking about his grandfather, you know, Alex's grandfather, Mikhail's dad, as being a very, very strong man who fully 100% believed in this story. And when this was going on in 1944, when he was a boy, when Mikhail was a boy, toward the end of the war, his dad was away fighting. So he says, I was a little kid, 6, 7 years old. He's like, and I remember my older brothers telling me that there was something that was killing our chickens. He said, and the neighbors down the street had a milk cow, down the road had a milk cow, and it was destroyed, killed, torn to pieces. So everybody started to whisper, werewolf. It's a werewolf. That's what it is. And everybody had an idea of who the culprit was. There was an old guy whose mother was a gypsy. He was half gypsy, half Belarusian. He lived alone. He had a wife who mysteriously disappeared. He claimed left him. But a lot of people think that he killed her. And he used to like to wear a big, giant wolf pelt. People said that when he walked around town, that his eyes, sometimes when he was angry, would glow like a yellow color. And one night, if he was the werewolf, he made a very crucial mistake. He was staring inside of someone's window, and this woman saw him. She positively identified him. She's like, it was him. I'm sure of it. When she took them to the window sill, they looked down at the ground, and there in the mud were two giant wolf prints. And then there was another witness that claimed they saw this werewolf running across the road, running alongside them when they were on their tractor, and then run across the road. And it was really messed up because this was a government, a communist government employee that saw this happen. So his word was like, hey, you know, this is, you know, and he said that the guy looked like a human from the top of his head to his waist. And then from the legs down, they were backward bent wolf-like legs. But sometimes people were describing a creature all gray looking, running around on all fours. And then one of them had snatched up a lamb and literally was just chewing it in half as they were shooting at it. And of course, it fled into the woods and was gone. They picked up this guy who was a hermit. They questioned him, and he didn't argue or fight. He said, yes, I'm a werewolf. And yes, I kill people and eat them. And yes, I kill animals and eat them. So the local constabulary, of course, they get involved and they take him before a magistrate. And this is basically just a village guy that's been set up, you know. And he comes from the city that I had talked about earlier, the city of Orsha. So this guy, this magistrate, comes from Orsha, and he says, are you a werewolf? And this guy says, yes. The constables look at him, and they said, case closed, right? The judge says, okay, well, if you're not going to defend yourself any more than that, then you're going to be hung. So he gave the mandate to the people and the police of that, you know, area, the constables, whatever, and then he left. Well, the townspeople were quite pissed off because three people had gone missing, and one of them was a child, and they knew that this guy had done it. So werewolf or not, they were going to get justice. So they took this guy out to an old dead tree. They basically disemboweled him and then hung him up, like, on the tree. That was it. And then they nailed him to the tree, almost kind of like a weird crucifixion, according to what Mikhail had said. And then they lit him on fire. So here's the weird thing. His friend that died at the hands of the Finnish, Vitali, he said, he goes, something weird happened. Remember I said that earlier? He goes, I watched that man burn. He's like, he had been disemboweled and he had been beaten pretty much to death. He was not alive. He's like, but when the fire hit him, he goes, he lifted up his head, opened his eyes, he goes, and they turned bright yellow. Not from the fire, from illumination, from nowhere, from wherever, from his head, you know, self-illuminating. And he said that he let out this ungodly howl that sounded demonic. It sounded like a pig mixed with a wolf, mixed with a man screaming and a bear's roar. He's like, I'll never forget it. He's like, and I saw his head move side to side, side to side. He goes, and I saw these weird looking ears kind of sprout up off of the side of his head, kind of like how an elf's ears would look, but they were like becoming pointy ears like a wolf's. He goes, and then I saw hair coming down off of his face, what looked like part of a snout, and then he just, the fire consumed him, and that was it. He said, Mikhail said, my friend told me that. He told me that day when we were sitting there. He reaffirmed it when we were sitting there in that ditch. He's like, that's what happened. I saw it. You can't tell me that that guy wasn't a werewolf. He goes, he was a werewolf. And so Mikhail said, after what happened that in that military unit he was in, he was like, you know, after his what happened to his dad. Mikhail said, after what happened to my dad in the military unit or whatever, he's like, he told me that story. He's like, and I always thought my dad was exaggerating, like just, you know, telling war stories and then adding some spice to it. You know, oh, we were fighting the Germans and werewolves, you know. And his dad would tell the story. He goes, but his dad would never change. The story was always the same. He said he must have told it 50, 60, 70 times, never changed it. But I never believed it. He goes, and then one day I'm walking home and he goes, maybe it's just in our bloodline. I don't know. But me and Sava get attacked by what can only be described as a vampire. And I told Alex, I said, what do you think, Alex? You were raised predominantly in the United States. You know, I mean, what do you think of all this? And Alex, you know, man, he doesn't even have an accent. He says, you know, I don't know. I don't know. He goes, I do believe in the dog man. I believe in Bigfoot. He's like, one of my best friends had an encounter with a Bigfoot. I asked him about that. He said, I was very brief. He was driving to North Carolina and saw one on the side of the road. That was it. It was just brownish chocolate color, you know. And so he said, he's like, but there's no doubt in my mind. He goes, that I think my grandfather was being completely honest. He goes, I heard him tell that story too before he died. And he said the funny thing is he told that story 2 days before he died. He died of a heart attack in his sleep. He's like, but he told that story with this, like, very vivid, and it was a lot of clarity, you know. And he said that I always believed him. My dad listened intently when he would talk. He said, but my dad said, I never believed it until what happened to me. He goes, and what happened to me, I can't explain it. The only thing I think of is it was a vampire. I don't know what it, and I don't know what it was. But that was last week's story, and this is this week's story. Anything to add or say before we go?
Sounds terrifying. I mean, especially being, you know, Belarusian in that kind of situation where basically everyone is your enemy. Everyone around you could at any moment be an enemy. And then you have this thing, which is definitely an enemy, which just attacks you. And it's like you're just living with death surrounding you from every direction. And you don't know what to do. And you're just kind of like forcing yourself along. I can't imagine that kind of being put like that. And then, you know, that vampire story was already horrifying enough. And I was like, it can't get any worse to one family. This happened? Like, my gosh.
Yeah, that guy's been through hell and back. I mean, his story could be like a miniseries or a movie or something.
There's a lot of stuff like that in the Russian archives, dude.
Mm-hmm, I'm sure. Yeah.
The Soviets kept everything hidden, you know?
Sure, it's not obvious to say, but wartime is definitely when you're going to see a bunch of supernatural activity spike up because it's just so much despair, carnage, you know, destruction, humans doing at their worst, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, Russians have a lot of stories. I've talked to a handful of them that have given me some really crazy stories from when they were in Afghanistan. Well, a couple of them from their sons, you know, that told me horror stories when they were fighting the Taliban. And then the Germans, you know, one of our best friends, his grandfather was Prussian. And when they were defending Prussia with a P, when the Soviets were rolling through and they had punched the Romanians aside and were just bearing down on Germany. Germany was fighting the war in the West too. And the end was near. I mean, his grandfather lost his life in a losing effort, you know. And he had some weird stuff to talk about, like some weird things happened. One of the things, and I only remember this, like just one thing I could just tell you, I remember this off the top of my head. His grandfather claimed one time he shot a guy in the chest, and when the guy was laying there dying, he went over to give him aid because he felt bad, you know. He was just another young guy like him. They were both probably in their early 20s, you know. And the guy was laying there trying to talk to him in Russian, and he couldn't speak Russian. And so he was kind of feeling bad and telling him, I'm sorry, you know. And the guy pointed up to the sky, and when he looked up, his grandfather saw the sky kind of open up, and for a minute he thought he saw heaven, which was weird. You know, that's just a weird thing. There was another story I got from, believe it or not, Reddit. And I got in touch with this guy, and he actually messaged me back. And he was talking about, we were speaking of the war in Finland, the winter war between Finland and Russia, where they were just killing the heck out of each other. And one of those Finnish soldiers shot him like right in the neck, and blood didn't come out, like this weird smoke came out of him. And the guy looked like part of his body turned to ash. So what the hell was that? I heard something very similar in Morocco, in Operation Torch, when the Americans landed. The Vichy regime French and the Moroccans inflicted some heavy casualties on the Americans. And this one guy was telling me that his grandfather told him that when they got to the shore and they started fighting, he killed one of the Moroccans. And when he did, he said that there was like this shrieking noise that came out of his throat, like where he had stabbed him, you know? And he said that this green-looking being, like kind of thing, floated up out of his neck and took off and went into the ocean.
That's insane.
He was like, what the hell? So he asked me about that. And I told him, I said, we hear stories of the green djinn, especially on that coastline there. But I could get into that and talk about that all day long. Weird stuff that happens in war, right? Weird stuff. You know, there was an episode of Paranormal Witness, I believe. It's called OP Rock. Go look it up. It's really cool. And it was the Americans had taken it over from the British. They were fighting the Taliban together. And so they were taking turns 60 days, and then they would go back, and the British would take it 60 days. And, of course, that was once a Soviet outpost because of it's up on a hill, right? So you can – and so they see images moving around at night that look like insurgents. But they were just covered up with turbans, and they had their faces covered. They couldn't tell what they were, and they would shoot at them, and they would just disappear. Nothing would happen. But that I've read the story, you know, but – I've also seen the Paranormal Witness or whatever it was, but it's a crazy story, man. I mean, and stuff happens in war.
It's funny that kind of like dust thing that you were mentioning about, like when he shot the soldier. You ever seen Hellboy, the first one with Ron Perlman?
I've never seen Hellboy.
Well, there's a German kind of like soldier in there who his whole thing is that he's basically immortal, and that his whole insides are dust at that point. They've become like, you know, withered over time. So every time you shoot him, all you see is like dust and like smoke coming out of him. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of that.
He's one of the villains, I guess.
Villain, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. It wouldn't be. They're not going to let a German be a good guy. You know, I look at war a little differently than a lot of people. Like a lot of people look at it like there were good and there were bad.
There's no such thing.
There's no such thing. When you know what I know, you've studied what I've studied, you got to look at it like, there's good and bad on both sides. That's all there is to it. And you look at the leaders, my gosh, Stalin and Hitler. Man, I don't know. Believe it or not, I think the Germans were a little more merciful than it's not a popular opinion, but I'm just being honest, folks. I think it's the truth. Because the Soviets were, of course, we had a Cold War with them for years and years and years afterwards. Pretty brutal regime, the Soviets. They killed, I think, somewhere between five times as many as the Germans. And I'm talking about up to the time leading up to the war, the NKVD had killed five times as many as the German regime had done. And I dare say the Germans learned a lot of their tactics from the NKVD, because the concentration camps that they supposedly set up in the East were actually just camps that had already been set up by the NKVD. And the Germans just took them over as they traveled east. And the story that the Soviets came and liberated everybody after that, that's not correct. They, if you want to call killing people liberating, that's not, you know, and I'm not laughing about, I'm just laughing at the silliness that people come up with in their minds.
They liberated them from this mortal coil.
Yeah, that's what they did. And they had an exceptionally cruel to the Poles in particular. The Germans and the Russians together were very, very mean and nasty to the Polish. But one of the reasons why the Germans and the Russians did not like the Polish, and it was very simple, the Polish had designs on expansion. And the Polish for years had been at war with Germany various times and Russia at various times. And with, you know, the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth was a very strong power. And they had done a lot of damage to Belarus and to Russia, fighting them. And part of that country, Belarus, had been decimated by the Poles. So they both looked at them with suspicion. And so when they invaded, and they invaded together, I mean, it's weird that they declared war on Germany, but not the Soviet Union. Soviet Union took the north and Germany took the south. And it was in 1939, and that started the war. But that's history lessons, and I look at it, like I said, from a very pragmatic and whatever. When you're dealing with two evil regimes, you're not going to get, like, you know what I mean? Like, you can't say, oh, well, these guys were more gooder than them. No, it was just...
That's how it works. I mean, it's funny because it's like propaganda still affects people to this day.
It does.
About, like, wars that are, like, you know, 50 years ago. It's like, what the heck? But people just don't really read into it. It's the same way, I think, why it was so effective back then is because people didn't read into it, and they didn't read or learn anything about it. You couldn't back then, but they definitely don't do it now.
Too.
Yeah.
And nowadays, you got every type of instrument.
They're literate,
in the world,
but they're
still, but the, you know, you're not getting the whole truth about anything. But war is war, you know, and I've heard stories of my uncle was in Vietnam. I have a couple of my uncles were in Vietnam, and one of them told me a story about a North Vietnamese guy helping him. He was just laying in the ditch with him, and they both, he just, the guy put his hand up to his you know, mouth, like, be quiet, his finger up to his mouth. And as the patrol went by, they both, whatever, and the guy just threw his gun down and took off because he didn't, he was, I guess, being forced by the Viet Cong to fight, but he didn't want to fight.
A lot.
He was a villager. He was just forced in, you know, and so my Uncle Frank was like, I crawled out of the hole, out of that ditch, and I looked at him, he looked at me, and we waved and both went our separate ways. You know, it's like, you know, he was hiding from the North Vietnamese patrol that had just taken out, you know, some of his friends. And of course, this Viet Cong, I guess, was just going to hide until he could get clear of it and go back to wherever he came from because he didn't want to fight. You know, that's just, it's just one of those things. I mean, sometimes in war, the enemy is just, you know, who knows? You know, in this case, was it the Russians? Was it the Germans? Was it the Finns? Was it the Romanians? Was it the other Belarusian insurgents? Or was it a werewolf?
Yeah, if you're a Belarusian and at that time, like in this situation, the world is your enemy at that.
Pretty much. You don't have anything. But anyway, folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. We love you guys. Thank you for all our Patreon members. Good night.